And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. You know what I want to do this morning? I actually want to go back to last week because I planned on covering a topic, and I'm kind of glad I didn't, because this way I think I can cover it just a little bit more thoroughly. But this is a topic that potentially everyone could use their wheels of imagination in their brain and say, you know what, maybe I can do something like that also. If you haven't ever heard this program before, Health Essentials, we're so glad to have you to join us on the program. I'm officially recording this. That way, if they play at a later date, if there's some information that you want, well, you can glean it then. Now, I'll go ahead and give out the phone number at the station, 903-586-5257, when I take calls later. All right. I kind of go on these kicks where there's one thing that I'm very interested in. I'll just kind of study it, and I'll look at it from different angles. But this morning, what I really want to do is I want to talk about something that's very practical that just about anybody can do if you're willing. I realize this will not appeal to everyone, but what I wanted to do is just talk about the healing benefits or the health benefits of eating cherries. I think a gentleman from Palestine, him and his wife, were telling me that where they grew up, the Queen Anne, or maybe the Victorian, I forget the name of it, cherries just grew everywhere in Oregon and Washington State. And to me, that would be so interesting just to go where there's an orchard for cherries. Anyway, I'm not going to talk about George Washington. So cherries, like other berries and other, you know, actually, what I should start off by saying is if you have to have a fruit and you're going to eat it, berries are so hard to beat because of their nutrient density. Usually they have significantly less sugar than, say, bananas or mangoes or pineapple, stuff like that. But they're so densely packed with nutrients, and these nutrients, they go by a lot of different names. Some are flavonoids, some are anthocyanidines, some are proanthocyanidines. But they have all these compounds that have been just proven to benefit the human body. And all you have to do is, you got to put them in your mouth. Well, what if you don't have great teeth? That's what a Vitamix or a blender's for. You can make a smoothie out of them. What if you like to eat sugar? Well, maybe you could talk yourself into a bowl of cherries. Okay, let me give this a shot right here. I'm looking at researchers at Michigan State University, and this is probably the most complex topic to think about at first, but if you will, just kind of hear me out on this topic. Michigan State University, what they did was they investigated the ability of a number of fruits, including cherries, to see which ones would act best as an antioxidant to inhibit an enzyme. That enzyme's name is cyclooxygenase, which I'm sure you could care less about that. Basically, they comes in two forms, COX-1 and COX-2, and both of those have different purposes. For example, the COX-1 enzyme is made by different cells in your body that creates prostaglandins, which are hormone-like molecules. And what they do is they tell your body, hey, you need to kind of clean up this over here or fix this over here. But the COX-2, that's the one that causes just about everybody that has inflammation a problem. Because what it does is you feel pain, you hurt. And by the way, you've already heard it said before, it's impossible to have pain unless you have inflammation. So if you hurt, if you don't feel great, you could tell me just about any health malady or degenerative condition, there's inflammation there. And so what they were doing at the University of Michigan, or Michigan State University, they wanted to look at what happens when we give anti-inflammatory drugs such as aspirin or ibuprofen or Advil, Tylenol, stuff like that. And they found out that when people are in pain, if you take enough Tylenol or ibuprofen or aspirin, which technically every single one of those has lots of side effects. I don't know if you know this, but they've estimated that it's at least 2,000 to 3,000 people a year die just because they bleed out from taking aspirin, just baby aspirin. So every time you consume an aspirin to try to either keep your blood thin or to deal with pain, you're going to lose some of your precious blood. And I guess the question is, how strong is the bone marrow and the stem cells and the ability of your body to replace that? Because when you consume aspirin, you're losing certain nutrients, some people more than others. And so if they use enough of those drugs, they can block pain more or less, you know, for a little bit. But newer drugs such as Vioxx and Celebrex, what they do is they block the COX-2 enzyme. But then again, those drugs, they have some very, very serious side effects. Now, this is not meant to be a joke, but I have never heard of an emergency room doctor or nurse saying, everybody stat, we've got an overdose of a person eating 10 cherries, they're going into stroke. That doesn't happen. I mean, when's the last time you've heard of somebody going to the ER because of eating a cherry? Now, I realize I'm not trying to make a joke about that, because for all I know, there may be one listener that has a severe allergic response to a cherry, but I just haven't heard it or seen it. I think out of all the severe allergic reactions that I've seen, it's been to stuff like chemically manufactured or processed iodine. Yeah, I've heard of people having severe reactions, but not to cherries, but it's stuff like iodine that they might use in a medical contrast test. Okay, I'll try to make this sound simpler. The researchers at Michigan State University, they found that the anthocyanidines from cherries are able to block both COX-1 and COX-2 enzymes. In fact, of all the fruits the investigators tested, cherries definitely had the highest amount of these key anthocyanidines. They contained 26.5 milligrams in 100 grams. That's roughly 20 cherries. So if you go to the store, most likely the best way that you're going to find cherries available this time of year, it's probably going to come in the frozen food section, because I'm not really aware of seeing any fresh cherries available. Maybe they're there. I haven't seen them. But if you went to the frozen food aisle, you know what, mothers, think about this before you give your kids ice cream. But what they found out was that if people ate 20 cherries a day, this was extremely comparable. And they said it's almost identical to the results they got when people took naproxen and ibuprofen and aspirin. I thought to myself, you know, you could actually put something in your body that actually helps rejuvenate inflamed tissues. And so if you're hurting right now, you got inflammation. What if you have pain in your shoulder blade or in your back? Well, you got inflammation. If you have chronic headaches, guess what's driving that? Inflammation. Now, obviously, you could ask the question and you would be right, and you say, hey, Dr. Morgan, what's behind the inflammation? Well, that's what we have to figure out also. But maybe one source of inflammation is you just don't have enough nutrients to enable these systems in your body to work right. That's why I'm talking about cherries. Now, another thing that I uncovered, in addition to these anthocyanidines that are found in Montmorency tart cherries, well, guess what they contain? They contain a hormone called melatonin. You ever heard of melatonin? Okay. There are studies, I don't have them in front of me right now, that show that where melatonin is very, very low, you have a much higher occurrence of developing Alzheimer's and certain forms of dementia. So to me, that's pretty important. So melatonin is a hormone that's normally produced in the pineal gland, which is kind of at the center and the base of the brain. And it has a very unique function over influencing sleep quality and the sleep cycle and the whole process of sleep from start to finish. So it's extremely important. But it also acts as a very powerful antioxidant. Maybe that's why when they give melatonin to people that might have a family history or in their, you know, their immediate family, like their mother, their father, older relatives that have dementia, when they give melatonin, it actually has a tremendous benefit because it gets rid of extra harmful oxidations or free radicals. So it acts as an antioxidant. Now, there are foods such as bananas that contain a little bit of melatonin, but they think that level's really probably way too low to do much to induce sleep. But according to the University of Texas, the Montmorency cherries, they contained up to 0.3 milligrams of melatonin per serving. Now, that's impressive. So at that dosage of like 20 cherries a day, melatonin has been shown to be an effective sleep inducer. What if you timed it just right? What if you said, instead of eating cake or a whole carton of ice cream or 20 donuts for a dessert after supper, I'm joking, what if you said, I'll eat a small bowl of frozen cherries? Obviously, let them thaw out a little bit to make it easy on you. But what if that started the process where you would go to bed? Do you know what it's like to go to bed and wake up stiff or more stiff and in more pain than what you went to bed in? That might be an indication that you may want to try some cherries to see if it can help soak up the inflammation. Now, here's my third point. And this one's good right here. Cherries, they may actually offer a very significant anti-cancer protection. Now, in no way do I mean to be negative, but I think it's good that we all are on the same page. I do not really think that we are winning the war on cancer when it comes to how effective we are at treating people that have cancer. So just keep this in the back of your mind. Also conducted at Michigan State University, two of the very unique anthocyanidines that are found in cherries, one of them is called isoquercitrin, and the other one you've heard of before, it's called quercetin. So in case you didn't know that, besides apples and onions, guess what else contains quercetin? Well, cherries do. But the reason why they studied these is the isoquercitrin and the quercetin, they have been shown to inhibit the growth of colon cancer. If I had to choose one screening test that might be good, it would be a colonoscopy, because what they can do is they can find precancerous polyps, for example, and they can remove them. Well, wouldn't you rather say an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure? Well, that's true. Well, consider cherries then. It also says that tart cherries contain a very special type of alcohol. It's called pyrrolyl alcohol, POH. It's a natural compound that appears to be extremely powerful in reducing the incidence of all types of cancer, not just colon cancer like I mentioned a while ago. And so, some research showed that the pyrrolyl, let me spell it for you, P-E-R-I-L-L-Y-L, pyrrolyl alcohol, it shuts down the growth of cancer cells by depriving them of one of the specific proteins they need to grow. Just like I've read studies, there are some studies that are being done on a drug called ivermectin. I know it's called a dog or a horse warmer, but there's something about it that interferes with the ability of the cancer cell to reproduce itself in the feed. Just like the Fenbendo does, the dog warmer medication, it does something to interfere with how a tumor or a cancer would feed itself. I don't know about you, but if we can find a way to prevent cancer cells and tumors from fueling themselves and stealing food so they can grow, I like it, especially if it's something like this. Safe. No one's ever gone to the emergency room that I've heard of because I ate a cherry. Okay, so if the pyrrolyl alcohol shuts down the growth of cancer cells by depriving them one of the proteins, let me go over this with you right here, because I can't even remember which university this came from. I need to look up the reference. In one study, they used pyrrolyl alcohol that came from cherries, and they found it performed extremely favorably in the treatment of advanced carcinomas of the breast. Now, what if you're a woman and you've tried all sorts of chemotherapy and it's not really doing anything to stop the cancer cells from spreading? Well, consider this. But they also have tested it for men. You know how women would have the breast cancer and men would have prostate cancer. Never heard of a woman having prostate cancer. Well, there's a reason why. Never mind. Also, ovarian cancer. It's also shown that they have worked really, really well in trying to stop preclinical breast cancer. Now, in animal studies, when they take pyrrolyl alcohol that comes from cherries, it's been shown to induce the regression of 81% of small breast cancers and up to 75% of advanced breast cancers. I think I like that. So there's a tool you can put in your toolbox right there. Finally, and this is the last topic on cherries, well, maybe the next last, I don't know if you've ever heard of anybody that has gout. It's got to be absolutely one of the most painful conditions that I've ever seen in my life. I remember I was exactly, let me think, I had to have been either 23 or 24, but I was working for Dr. Mark Woods, a chiropractor, and I was working in his clinic, helping. I had the benefit of working under his authority where I could actually treat patients, but I remember this gentleman walked into the office, and I think his profession was that he hauled pulpwood. Okay, that's a good profession. He had overalls on, he had work boots, but I'm telling you, when he walked in the office, he had the entire front of his work boot cut off and removed. And he asked me if I could help him. I'm telling you, when I was 23, I think I was at a loss for that one. That was just a little bit too much, because it's literally one of the most severe forms of arthritis of all time. Well, in a nutshell, cherries have been shown to be really, really good to help prevent gout from forming in the first place. Now, one of the studies I read said they consumed a half a pound a day. Now, that's a lot, but you tell me, how much pain are you in? Now, let me tell you this right here. This was probably 20 years ago. Here in Jacksonville, I'm just going to say I went into a store, because if I say it differently, it'll be so obvious and everybody will tease me about it. But anyway, I went to the store, and on the shelf, they had bags of dried fruit. And I want to say that, you know, there was probably raisins. I know there were prunes. And then there was a bag of what is called dried cherries. And I thought to myself, I don't even know if I've ever tried dried cherries before. So I grabbed what I thought was the bag of dried cherries. And this was on my lunch break, and I paid for them. And when I walked out the car, I said, man, I'm going to try these. And you know what? I like dried fruit. And I found out in about, I'm going to say, 30 minutes that most likely the 20 dried cherries I ate really weren't dried cherries. I'm thinking they were another fruit called a prune. Anyway, what I thought I'd do this morning is, when I was reading about cherries, I remember that one of the types of cookies that my mother used to like to make, she used to like to make a cookie called a Boston tea cake. I don't think I've had one in like 20 years, but they were pretty cool. She did this other one in which she would take and make peanut butter cookies, and that was one of my favorites also. And cookies were a rare treat at my house. You didn't have them all the time, and that's probably the way it should be. And the other one that she would make was oatmeal raisin. Well, I thought to myself, what if I came up with this creative way to help people that have maybe an issue like constipation? And I kind of need your feedback on this. So what if I started making a type of an oatmeal cookie, but instead of raisins, I put a high amount of prunes in there? Well, I was trying to come up with a name so I can start a new business, and I thought about, and you just tell me what you think about this. What do you think about the name Colon Cookies? Does that sound appealing? The other one, I should be embarrassed, but I'm not. I'm actually entertaining myself. What about the idea? What about the name Colonic Cookies? Do you think if I put, you know, those in the store as my own unique cookie, that people would get the idea what they're for? This one's too wordy. Enema oatmeal wafers. I don't think that's going to go. The last two names I came up with, and you may not believe this, but I came up with all this within about 1 minute before the program started. That doesn't really mean that I'm that clever, but This has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, that's like 6 words. That's like a little bit long name for a cookie name. But I thought, if they were filled with prunes, I could call them Stay Close to the Bathroom Cookies. You know, you get that? The last one may be a copyright infringement. I don't know if I can do it. What do you think about the name Liquid Plumber Cookies? Okay, I'm done. I'm officially done. All right, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Yes, I want to know what you can do about blood that wants to clot in the legs.
Well, can you give me more information?
Well, in the calves, I've for some months I've had a problem with. It felt like just tight muscles, but later on I began having feelings behind the knee and up the thigh, and some of the veins began to kind of feel hard, and so I didn't know if it was trying to get blood clots, because I wasn't used to that sort of
There's never a time to get blood clots. Has anything happened to you that has preceded this, like did you get sick with COVID?
I don't know that I did. I wasn't ever tested for it.
Did you have a period before the calves got tight that you just felt horrible for 3 weeks?
No, I didn't. I didn't have anything.
I mean, I would think you would know.
I could be, rather asymptomatic or something like that. Nothing that was like. I would remember it for the rest of my life, that bad or anything like that.
Are you taking any drugs of any kind?
Yeah, and right this second I'm having a hard time remembering, but there was a drug for, it was the one that's oftentimes taken with Flomax. I'm trying to remember the name of it.
But it's like it's a process.
Alpha 5 reductase.
Yeah. Finasteride or something like that.
Finasteride.
Yeah, something that's going to be an alpha 5 reductase inhibitor. They're trying to change the hormones in the prostate so it won't be quite so swollen.
Right.
One thing that I would do is I'd go to a website called drugs.com, and I would just type those two drugs in, and I'd find out, is there any possibility that a lot of people complain of cramps in the legs? Just like this week, I had a woman yesterday. She tried taking, I'm just going to say Crestor, if I got the name wrong, or no, it was Simvastatin, I believe. But she told me specifically, she said, within just a few days, my arms and my legs, they hurt so bad. And that's just three doses. She said, I can't do it. Every time the doctor wants me on this cholesterol-lowering medication, it just kills me. And so, in her situation, cause and effect. So I would look up those two drugs. If I had my computer here, I'd look them up for you and kind of do you a favor. But that's one thing that you have to consider, because there may be some very unpleasant side effects of taking those drugs when it comes to the quality of your blood and circulation.
I've done exactly that, and when I looked up the results, I immediately went off of it, because I made that connection. Whether or not it's connected or not, I made that connection. I've been on finasteride for a month. And anyway, I went off of it, I can say that the feeling has diminished.
The feeling in your legs?
Yes.
Okay. Good deal.
It still reoccurs, and I didn't know if there was anything else maybe that's causing that tight feeling.
Well, I don't know either, but I tell you what, I'm gonna give you some ideas of what to do and how to do it.
Okay.
One thing that I would do is I would just set your mind that you're going to go walking every day. Walking is one of the most valuable tools that I think that we have when it comes to clearing toxins from the body, even the side effects of a drug. Because anytime that you walk, you greatly enhance and increase blood flow and oxygen. So your blood, that's your ocean that's filled with oxygen and nutrients to clean your body. So the faster that blood moves through your calves, the closer you're going to come to being asymptomatic and feeling like $1 million. The other thing that I would do if it were me is I would rub either castor oil or olive oil all over them.
Okay.
And just let it soak in. So, like, if you were to go to bed at night, the one way that you keep castor oil off your bedding or off your sheets is to cover them with merino wool socks, just because they're super comfortable. And you might tell me that you see a difference or a change for the better. The other thing that I would be most curious about, the standard blood tests where they measure, for example, your red blood cell count, your hemoglobin, your hematocrit, in a man, when those three markers tend to become the higher end of normal, what that kind of suggests to me is either a man's a little bit dehydrated or somewhat dehydrated, or his blood is way too thick or way too dirty. So that's my terminology. I just mean the blood is thicker than what it is. But going back to the calf for a second, if this was 100 years ago and you asked a doctor, what does the calf muscle really do? He'd say, son, it's your second heart. And so your heart does a great job of pumping oxygen-rich blood down to your toes. But for the most part, it's going to be the tone of the muscles in the soleus and both calf muscles that gently massage and push the blood back up. So if that becomes congested, you can start to see some of those veins kind of sticking out. I mean, you've seen varicose veins, haven't you?
Yeah, and that's another thing I was going to say is I've been noticing more, I don't know if you call them varicose veins, but I'm seeing purple.
Well, if you see them now and you didn't see them like, you know, a year ago, there's a clue that there's a change in your body. So that may mean that your blood is kind of pooling and congested. So at the very least, start. Now, I know this sounds kind of technical, and I apologize because it's a little bit much sometimes. But usually, when there's a vein problem, and studies show that you can reverse varicose veins, but it's going to take like close to a year and a half usually, and walking. But walking is one of the best activities of all time.
Okay. That sounds great. And by the way, I've noticed that there's an improvement in that. I've also, there's an improvement with walking because I've been trying to do more of that.
Good job.
Also, I've been elevating my feet when I go to bed at night, maybe 4 inches with a pillow.
Would you believe me if I told you there's a study where a very unique scientist, an expert from MIT or Massachusetts Institute of Technology, what he did was he did the reverse for varicose veins. He found if you could elevate the head of the bed by about 4, 5, or 6 inches, that greatly improved varicose veins, which I realize it doesn't make sense initially, but it helps promote better blood and hemodynamics of blood flow. So if you elevate the other direction, you could always test that and see if it works better than elevating your feet.
We'll try that.
Plus, we don't want too much blood to go to your brain where you'll be too smart. I mean, is there any chance you could be too intelligent? I've never had to worry about that.
not likely. Could you comment? I mean, I've wondered if it was... Okay, there is the concern about blood thickening and blood clotting and pooling.
I tell you, probably the last 4 or 5 people that I've seen that have had legitimate blood clots confirmed by ultrasound, one of the remedies they chose to take was just one called Hawthorne. And I'm telling you, I have been more impressed with Hawthorne because I've seen it dissolve clots where nothing else would.
Okay, Hawthorne, I've got some. I want to take it. What about, let's see, what's the one that's for leg vein health? Horse chestnut.
Yeah, it might either be butcher's broom or horse chestnut extract, something like that. And I think those are beneficial, but I don't think that they compare to eating, you know, fruits and vegetables and walking.
Okay.
I mean, I think that they're good, but usually if I can convince a person to start walking, man, that's where you see all the great changes.
Okay. And what about electrolytes? You know, to rule out whether or not there's muscle cramping due to electrolytes.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, one of the things I thought of when you first started on this topic, there was a study where they looked at individuals that had absolutely the lowest confirmable intake of potassium. Well, guess what they have? They have the highest amount of blood clots and strokes. And so as one example, when you eat foods that are rich in potassium, which is not hard to do, and this is just like the simplest example that I can give you, if you ate one bowl of green leafy salad a day, and you can add whatever you want to it, if you say, but Dr. Morgan, I love to eat either fresh chicken or pterodactyl in my salad, I'm going, perfect, fine. But you get about 5,000 milligrams of potassium. And the reason I love this is potassium, it plays such a powerful role in making sure that your blood flows through your arteries and veins faster. So the faster that blood moves through the arteries, the better. The slower it moves, not good.
Well, that's good news about the salad. I was looking at potassium pills. Each one provides about 2% of the RDA. I thought, my goodness, you'd have to take a half a bottle of pills to get.
That's ridiculous. I mean, it really is. Now, did you catch my conversation about the cherries and the prunes earlier?
I was listening to that. Yes.
Well, what do you think about the idea of the liquid plumber cookies? Do you think that would be a little bit too strong of a sales pitch, or what do you think?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know about that.
Well, I'm still trying to play with the idea. I've been working on it for a solid 10 seconds now, and that it's really coming that works.
Okay.
All right.
I may have a slight allergy to cherries, and that's a concern.
Well, if you do, then obviously you would be the one person that would avoid those.
Yeah.
But when you eat things like blueberries, you are really, really helping your circulation, your veins. Can you tolerate blueberries?
Oh, I think so. Yes, I do pretty good with those. There may be a very slight allergy to those if I eat a whole 2 cupfuls a day. But
we might have to tone it down then to a half a cup.
Right. We just planted a bunch of muscadine grapes all around. We have like six vines, and those are supposed to make about, when they're mature, about 60 pounds a year. They've got lots of those phytonutrients. I'm not sure.
What I think you should do is, if you have a pin oak tree that's 85 feet tall, if you'll just plant it by that way when they come due, they'll be all the way up at the top of the tree.
Well,
you just catch them when they're falling.
we got, I don't know, but we got first year of production last year. But I've heard they have a lot of some of the same.
They do. I mean, grapes are fabulous. You know what? That is just so cool that you plant grapes. Isn't that fun? I love it.
Yes, yeah. Well, thank
you're
you for taking my call.
Thanks a bunch, buddy. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
I'm still getting used to the buttons right here. Okay. There is a phone line officially open. It's 903-586-5257. If you'd like to ask me a question, please. All righty. I pushed the button correctly. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. How about those cookies, Dr. Morgan's realignment cookies?
You know what? If a person feels like that their colon is all backed up, and if you can realign it, man, that would work. That's brilliant.
Yes. Yes.
I love it.
That's the perfect one.
Wait, do I have to share a major billion-dollar royalty with you if I use that term?
No, sir. You can use that as long as when I come to visit you, that you can kind of give me a discount on my vitamins.
What if I give you a bag of cookies as a bonus?
Well, yeah, probably would work too.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Thanks for your input.
Well, what made me think about it was my mom when we were kids and we would start acting up. Guess what? The castor oil came out. We were going to get an adjustment.
You know what? I like that better. Castor oil clean out cookies. Yeah, don't you? Well, you see, when I was a boy, there was lye soap. Have you ever put lye soap in your mouth?
No, we got whatever mom had close to the sink or you know, in the bathroom.
You know, isn't it funny though that the remedies and the dietary recommendations, you know, back in the past, they're so radically different today.
Yes, can't make no money off those.
I think you summed it up. Are you quoting scripture now that the love of money is the root of all evil?
there's a tendency there for a big pharma. So.
Oh man, you ain't kidding. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I better let you go where somebody can talk.
Hey, thanks so much for your phone call.
Can help. Right, no
appreciate
problem,
you. Bye-bye.
You bet. Bye.
All right. It only took me 2 tries that time. I'm going to figure this out. Okay, if you want to join me on the radio, 903-586-5257. Thank you so much for your phone call. I'm Dr. Morgan.
How are you doing?
I'm great, thank you. How about you, ma'am?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. I was going to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
I had to go to the doctor the other day, and of course they took blood, and they told me that my cholesterol was kind of high.
What did that mean?
Well, she wanted to put me on prednisone, I think.
Or maybe provastatin or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, she probably wanted to put you on a drug to lower the cholesterol.
Right. And I was wondering, is there something besides those drugs that I could lower my cholesterol with?
Well, the absolute simplest way that I can describe this is, as a general rule, the healthier that you are, the lower your cholesterol will naturally be at. And then number two, cholesterol is made from a substance called acetate in your liver. And acetates come from the breakdown of refined sugar and sugar. So it's called an inverse relationship, meaning the higher the intake of sugar, or maybe not inverse, but it's the delta relationship. The higher the intake of sugar, the higher the cholesterol. But you know what some of the studies show? They show that if people take that particular pravastatin for 7 years, guess what? They develop diabetes.
Yeah.
And which you want to avoid that, obviously.
Right.
And so if you want your cholesterol lower, one of the major studies that was done, they looked at only two things. They looked at onions and garlic. And they showed where people had literally no onions and garlic, their average cholesterol ran around 275. That's just an average. But when people consumed lots of onions, guess where their cholesterol was? It was significantly lower. Now, as your personal physician, I'm going to recommend a meal of liver and onions for breakfast today. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, I don't mind that, except for the raw onions. They mess my stomach up.
You would have to saute them or cook them.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I mean, do you like things like making meatloaf where you might put peppers and onions and stuff like that in it?
Not really.
You are being extremely difficult with my brilliant plan for your health. Well, if you like sauteed onions, then that would get my vote.
Okay. And one of the reasons that I went to them is because I was starting to have a lot of fever blisters or cold sores.
Mm-hmm. Do you eat a lot of nuts?
Well, I had been eating a lot. I'd been eating a lot of Mexican food and spicy foods, which I know normally that messes me up. And I usually take L-lysine, and I had done that, except for I'd taken too much of that. And, of course, that kind of gave me some other issues.
Mm-hmm.
But I just couldn't get the fever blisters to go away. So I went ahead and went in, and she gave me some medicine for that. And I was taking that, but it was making my stomach real...
You know what? You know what? Something just might be super simple. You might just try getting a very inexpensive bottle of L-lysine at the health food store.
That's what I had taken.
Oh, you did?
I'd taken too much of it, and it was giving me issues, diarrhea, so I had to quit.
Well, I don't want that for you. I mean, that's the problem with these... constipation cookies I'm trying to develop and bring to market. I haven't approached Walmart yet, but I'm thinking they're going to be totally on board.
Yes, absolutely.
So, or maybe not. But anyway, well, let me ask you, can I ask you a couple questions since I've got you here? Do you feel good?
Well, yeah, except for my fever blister. And actually, the blisters have gone away, and it's just real red around my mouth, and my lips are real, real tight.
Well, you know, are your eyes dry by chance? Are your sinuses real dry?
No. Uh-uh.
Is there any possibility that daily you eat nuts, and that could be peanuts or peanut butter, almonds, trail mix, mixed nuts?
Not daily, but I do like a lot of nuts.
Well, that's probably one of the simplest things I can tell you. If you tried no nuts for about 2 weeks, you may notice your fever blisters completely go away.
Oh, okay.
And the other thing that I would tell you that would be, I'm not saying it's easy to do. It is easy to do, but it might be a little bit messy. If you want those fever blisters to go away, you could always rub them with just raw honey. And so when I say raw honey, I kind of like the kind that looks like pretty dirty at the store where you can't see through it.
Yes. Well, she gave me some salve to put on them because the pills were making me kind of nauseous, and I put that on, and it almost feels like Desitin, and it's kind of hard to put it in there. But
those are all just drugs, but the raw honey, it may heal your... Or the other thing you could do is if you went to like a health food store and they had like a lip balm that was made of honey.
Oh, okay. Yes. Okay.
You know how the Bible says we're supposed to greet each other with a holy kiss? How do you feel about that scripture? Do you like that one?
Yes, yes.
Well, then you need to find a beekeeper that goes to church, and you'll be fine. No, but if you did put some raw honey at night on your lips, I bet you you'd wake up in the morning and say, oh, my goodness, this is like the best thing I've ever been. And the other thing that I like is just plain Jane, unfiltered, extra virgin olive oil.
Oh, okay, yes.
It's years ago, I mean, I don't use a lot of it, but I used to use this fat-soluble chlorophyll. But it looks like the darkest green-black substance of all time. But I'm telling you, if you put chlorophyll on your lips, there's nothing that makes them heal fast. It's just, you may have to show up at church tomorrow morning with these, like, dark black lips. You might kind of have, like, a goth look.
That'll go over good.
Oh, I know. You won't attract any attention to yourself. Nobody will be staring at you.
They'll probably lay hands on me, try to heal me.
Well, you know what it says in the Bible. If any of you are sick, go to the elders, and they'll pray and anoint you with oil, right?
Right.
Well, if you will just make a concerted effort not to consume nuts of any kind, see if all these issues start to kind of magically clear up.
Okay. All right.
I started to tell the joke about the preacher that went to the nursing home to visit the woman, and he asked if he could have some nuts. You've already heard that one, haven't you?
No, I don't think so.
And she had no teeth, but she had made the comment that, help yourself, because I've already taken the chocolate off of them. Anyway, never mind.
No.
Okay, never mind. Okay, I'm not that funny today. Scratch it. No, but thank you for your call, and I wish you the very best.
All right, thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Much.
Bye-bye. Have a good day.
You too.
Thank you so much. Okay. Oh, my goodness. I have no idea what I'm doing with these buttons. I'm going to have to figure it out anyway. All right, if you'd like to join me on the air, the phone number is 903-586-5257. Let me try to push this two more times. Anybody there? Okay. I think I got it. Maybe not. You know, you've heard this before, but you don't underestimate this. Raw honey is literally one of the greatest healing agents in the universe. It is. I think I had an individual not that long ago that had a tear of their esophagus, and the pain was so great. Well, one of the simple remedies was to just aloe vera with a little bit of raw honey. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Dr. Morgan. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, ma'am?
I'm doing very well. I missed part of the earlier part of this broadcast, so I know that I have crumbly toenails, which tells me my circulation isn't the best.
Now, do you mean thickened toenails?
Yeah, they're a little bit thickened.
Okay. Are they kind of a yellowish color?
No. They're regular color.
Okay. Well, the reason I ask is the number one thing that I think of when the toenails start to become a little bit thickened is poor lymphatic blood flow or circulation, lymphatic fluid. And that's the that's the fluid that bathes your entire body, so I kind of cut you off. What was your question?
Well, no, I was just wondering how I can improve, because I'm a diabetic.
Okay.
I have psoriatic arthritis. So I need to take really good care of my feet.
Well, I'm going to give you just a simple rundown, and you tell me if any of them sound good to you. Number one, if you rub castor oil on your feet and your toes, toenails, heels, calves, and then you cover them with merino wool socks at night, that's going to help improve your blood flow. If you're not walking every day or you're not exercising, if you set your mind that you're going to do something... And really, I don't care what it is. If you tell me that you love walking, or you want to stand in front of the TV and do a, you know, exercise video, or you want to get bicycle pedals or something like that, it's all good. But the name of the game is you've got to rapidly increase blood flow and circulation to give your body a chance to heal. So that's important.
Okay.
The other thing that does work, and I realize every person that hears me say this is going to just cringe and say, Dr. Morgan, you're nuts. It's not going to work right. But if you had a safe place to walk barefoot outdoors on the grass without fear of stepping on a pine stub or a grass burr or a sticker, or a copperhead. Well, then, if you walk barefoot, study after study show that if people keep it up and they do it, they have twice as many blood vessels, meaning arteries, veins, lymphatic, and they have twice as many nerves. And so that's one of the ways that you completely reverse a diabetic neuropathy, because if you're growing more blood vessels, that's a solution to your problem. Your toenails will return to their normal size and shape, and you'll get the feeling back. But it's one of those things. It requires discipline and persistence, or maybe I should say perseverance and sticking at the task at hand.
How long?
Well, if you do it for 15 to 20 minutes a day, for like I mentioned to the gentleman earlier, to heal varicose veins, most studies that have examined it, it takes about a year to a year and a half to reverse them. So I would guess about a year. But, you know, if somebody comes to see me and they have a horrible neuropathy, I mean, I'm doing everything I can to restore that. So one technique, besides walking barefooted, is, you may not like it, is submersing your feet and your legs in a bucket of ice cold water for 10 minutes a day.
Oh,
I know. Oh, was that like joy in your voice I just heard? I'm usually good at reading people. That meant you're happy, right?
Oh.
No, but there's nothing that gets rid of the inflammation from your legs. What now?
No, that is true. I had Achilles tendonitis, and I had to put my heels in ice cold water.
And it was brutal, though, wasn't it?
It was very brutal.
Oh, well, I'm not personally trying to attack you. Other things that I like very, very much, I like, do you know what beets are? It's like an earthy vegetable. Some people don't like them because they taste like dirt.
Right, I know what beets are.
Well, some companies, they sell these beet crystals or beet powder where you could take like a teaspoon or so and stir it in a cup of water and drink it. Not everybody
right.
digs it, but I'm telling you, beets are good for improving blood flow and circulation.
Okay.
I would say if I wanted to kill blood flow and circulation, I'd eat sugar. Usually with neuropathy, if I can get someone's blood sugar to come down to around 90, that's where you see it disappear and go away. So if somebody had diabetes and it was, say, 400 and a quarter, it's going to be kind of hard to reverse it because the sugar is gluing itself to the nerves and damaging the tissues at a faster rate than what you can repair.
Right.
I mean, that does make sense. I think magnesium is important. I'm a huge fan of things like black currant seed oil. It doesn't take much, just a little bit. I think that's a healer of the circulation. I think cod liver oil is fabulous.
Wait, you said black currant oil?
Yes, it's called black currant seed oil. They have in the close cousins that have this high concentration of gamma linoleic acid are going to be like evening primrose oil. That stuff's great. Barrage oil, that's great too. But there's a small flower called, or plant called black currant, or maybe it's pronounced black currant for all I know. But that one seems to have the highest natural concentration, so you end up taking fewer pills or capsules and it ends up being cheaper. So I've kind of settled. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love evening primrose oil. But if I can get a person to take two little bitty gel caps of black currant seed oil for one-third of the cost of what the evening primrose oil is, usually I'm going to go with that. It tends to be more concentrated. So I try to save people money when I can.
All right. Well, that sounds great.
So those are some of the things you're looking at. But do you go for walks for as your daily exercise, anything like that?
I haven't, because I just got off of a flare-up with my psoriatic, and I couldn't straighten my leg for a couple of days.
If you only ate meat and vegetables and you cut out all the grains, most likely your psoriatic arthritis will begin to diminish and go away.
That would be good.
I remember
that
years ago,
cold front got me.
Yeah, I bet it did. All the barometric pressure change. I remember listening to a podcast with Dr. Jordan Peterson, and I won't go into great detail, but I think he has a daughter that by the time she was either 13 or 14, she'd already had joints replaced. And I don't really remember the story because I didn't get in on all of it to hear the details, but most likely she had just a very, very severe version of something like juvenile rheumatoid arthritis. You know what I mean, don't you?
Yeah.
Or polymyalgia rheumatica. But it was so severe that her immune system had just destroyed the joints. Now, she said, when I heard her make the comment, that a carnivore diet absolutely has cured her depression, anxiety, and severe arthritis. So I don't know what that's like to have multiple joints replaced in my body by the time I'm a teenager and then switch to a carnivore diet. But a carnivore diet, you're just cutting out all the grains. It's not a forever deal, but she was making the comment. Now, Dr. Jordan Peterson, what he said was it completely cured his gingivitis and dental problems and his depression, which I think is very interesting. So just an idea. Bless you.
Thank you.
It's
okay.
But that's a starting point for you. If you just ate two meals a day, lunch and supper, and you skip breakfast, that's going to be the easiest condition by which you reverse diabetes.
Yeah, I've been doing the intermittent fasting. And
oh,
so
you're smart. That's good.
My sugar had gotten up after a hard year to 11. And
you mean
April,
the hemoglobin A1C?
Correct. And yeah. It got down to 10.4 in June, 7.4 in September.
Yay! Good job.
And now it's, she did the quick A1C in the office, and it's 6.6.
Well, look at you. You're moving it in the right direction. Way to go.
So I'm definitely working on, and I'm doing more, like, vegetable carbs, whole carbs.
Yeah, low-carb vegetables like broccoli and spinach and kale and Brussels sprouts, cabbage, stuff like that.
And Irish potatoes.
Well, remember, if you heat up the potatoes and cook them and put them straight in the refrigerator and take them out the next day and heat them up, you only get half the carbs.
That's the way to do it.
There you go. At least that's a consideration, but you're doing great. Now, officially, if you've gone from 11 all the way down to 6.6 on your hemoglobin A1C, now you've got the green light. You got permission to start walking. Because ultimately, that's the only way to reset all the insulin receptor sites effectively or efficiently. So you can do it, woman. You're doing great.
But I'm going to get the black currant oil and go back to putting the stuff on my feet.
And the bucket of ice cold water for 10 minutes a day. And you'll thank me for that. Which town do you live in, by the way?
Well, by my hollering, I think you'll figure it out that it's Chandler.
Oh, so when I hear a loud shrieking shrill of a scream from cold water immersion? Okay.
Right.
All right, this is working out great. There's only one lake between you and I. It's just Lake Palestine.
and, you know, it's almost cold enough.
Well, I think it's going to be today. I think the high is supposed to be 61.
Woo!
Hey, you could go fishing. Put your feet in the water.
All right, well, I'm going to...
All right, thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. You have a good day, sir.
All right, you too. Appreciate you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow, I think I pushed the right button that time. Way to go, Roy. Okay, the number here at the station is 903-586-5257. There's about 5 minutes left. Another plenty of time for a phone call. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Yeah, you'll have to turn the radio down.
I just did.
Good. Thank you.
The intermittent fasting that you just talked of there.
Yeah, that's what the lady mentioned that she was doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're getting your A1C under control, can you make that morning and lunch instead of the other way? That work okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Just whatever works for you. I'm just historically.
How far apart do those hours need to be?
Well, what I'm going to say is I'm going to say it kind of in reverse. I'm going to say, what is the feeding window? And so you can have a feeding window where you eat breakfast. And I'm just going to make up something here. Let's say you have your breakfast at 8 o'clock and you have lunch at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Or it could be 9 and 3, something like that. Does that make sense?
Now, are you timing from when you start the meal or when you end the meal?
Well, you know what? I don't ever get hung up on that. If you look up at the clock and you say, oh, my goodness, it's almost 7 o'clock on Saturday morning, time for me to turn on my radio. That's close enough.
Got one other quick question, because I know you're running toward the end. You've mentioned coffee, and mm-hmm. I have just nearly totally cut it out, but is decaf any better than regular?
It can be if one of the main issues is just a negative reaction to caffeine, and I do see that occasionally, not frequently, but some people that have chronic headaches and they have chronic issues with their body, and sometimes caffeine is a thorn in the flesh.
And we're also trying to avoid loss of minerals, right?
Absolutely. I think that you know what you're talking about.
Well,
that's it. Well, there's always going to be a limit to how much you can consume. Uh-huh. And so if usually most studies show that if you have less than 16 ounces of coffee, that's a lot easier on your body than somebody that has like 32 ounces or 48.
Oh, no, I don't drink that much.
And I know you've heard of people doing that, because I hear
it. Yes, I have.
Yeah, and if you do get coffee, I would strongly suggest to you that if you can get like an organic coffee, at least that way you're trying to have confidence that you're not introducing chemicals that's sprayed from a crop duster over the coffee plantation.
Yes. Right. Well, those were my two questions, so I'll let somebody else talk.
Okay.
And thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You're so appreciated.
Oh, you, thank you.
God bless you.
God bless you. You made my day. Bye-bye.
Oh, wow. Bye.
Okay, the concept of the intermittent fasting, or a different way of saying it is, if you had diabetes, or actually any condition and you want to lose weight or rejuvenate your body, if you had a feeding window, and some people do really well with an 8-hour feeding window, and what that means is they have all the food they're ever going to eat throughout the day, hopefully it's good choices, in an 8-hour window. Some people have done really, really well or better if that's a 7 or a 6-hour window. And so that's why I gave the example that if you ate breakfast at 9 o'clock in the morning and then your last meal's like at 3 o'clock, that's a 6-hour window right there. Does that make sense? I've even seen people that have been desperate to restore their health because they felt as if they were going to die. You know, because they either got some bad news from a doctor or they, well, no, that's usually where it comes from. They'll have a diagnostic test and the doctor will say, ma'am, we're going to get you to hospice. You don't have long to live. And sometimes that's where I'll try to convince them to do a shorter feeding window. But it takes the body a little while to adapt to it, but it's so advantageous and it's so good for you. Because what will happen is, when you eat all the food you're going to eat in a 6-hour window, and hopefully that'd be things like protein and fat and good carbohydrates, not sugar and junk, you make it so easy for your body to say, oh my goodness, he's not going to give us breakfast or supper. What are we going to do here? Well, your body's going to switch its attention from digesting food and processing, which is pretty energy intensive, to your body may say, you know what, maybe we should start cleaning out and repairing the brain, or repairing the diabetes or the cancer, stuff like that. That's really a big deal. So intermittent fasting can be one of the greatest techniques of all time. One thing that it's easy for most people to do is just to fast from lunchtime on Saturday until, you know, they go to sleep that evening with skipping supper. Sleep takes up some of it, which is a blessing. And they wake up in the morning, they refuse breakfast, they get ready for church, they go to church, and after church, they will have lunch. And so for a lot of people, that can easily be a 24 to maybe a 25 or 26-hour fast. And done once a week, it's one of the brilliant ways to help reset the immune system and help your body heal itself. And on top of that, it's free. Anyway, I've enjoyed being with you today. Thank you for your kindness and your attention, and your I just appreciate you spending time with me. Lord willing, I will be back this time next Saturday morning.